All right. Thank you, everybody. We're going to close with the best panel yet. So this is all ladies, moderator included. So I'll pass it off to G to introduce yourself.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is G. I am the Director of Talent Management at The Cosmopolitan. So you are here at my workplace. Welcome to Vegas. Welcome to The Cosmopolitan. I hope everyone's having a wonderful time. In my role, I oversee learning and development, internal communications, community engagement, and performance management. So I'm very excited to be part of this panel and excited to get to know you all.
Hi, everyone. I'm Christina Beckman. I lead Environmental Social Governance, ESG, for Culligan International. So we oversee sustainability, social impact, some of DE&I work, and also governance policies as well. Great to be here.
Hi, everyone. I'm Eve Badecki. I'm with TD Bank, America's most convenient bank. Little plug. I'm the HR lead for the U.S. retail and commercial banking team. I have the privilege of working with a team of senior HR business partners that support 10,000 colleagues from Maine to Florida and several hundred executives that produce about 70% of the U.S. bank's revenue. So just a little bit of fun in my space. Thanks for having us.
Great, thank you. So we'll start off with a question that we left off the video with. Do you think the 9-to-5, 5 days a week work week is over?
Let's go first.
I'll start. I sure do. So I think what's most important is to meet employees where they're at. I think we've kind of proven over the last couple of years that a flexible workplace is possible. And in fact, some folks feel more productive like that. And if there is any cynicism about that, I just encourage you all to talk to your employees. Maybe try it for a couple months. And if it doesn't work, then great. But start there.
So I would say partially. So the hybrid model has really been working for us because, you know, I think we've shifted with COVID the butts in seats culture to more of a, you know, productivity and outcome. So, you know, we have to be here. We have co-stars, and I'm going to use the word co-stars. That's how we refer to our employees because, you know, guests are the stars and, you know, our employees are our co-stars. So we need our co-stars to support, you know, check guests in and serve our guests. So we need to be here. So the hybrid model has been working well where, let's say on Wednesday is an office day. So everybody connects and gets to meet, do in-person meetings. But other days, we have the flexibility. But when we do work from home, then we check in every morning. So we talk about priorities, what the goals are, and we just communicate throughout. So let's say they have a doctor's appointment at 2 o'clock. You know, I trust that my team will maybe stay a little late or, you know, start their day early to get the job done. So it's been really productive having that hybrid work model so that, you know, if the employees want to work from home, they do. But we also want to make sure that we're here to support. So yes, all my functions like learning and development, internal communications, we are able to work remotely 100%, but we don't because we want to be here for the team when they need us. You know, we don't want them to come to our office and realize that we're working from home and they feel the need to schedule a time with us. So we do make sure that there's someone within my team represented in the office at all times so that we can support our team members.
Yeah, so for my portfolio, we have retail stores, our branch banks, that are open 7 days a week. So they have not had the luxury of working from home. They are truly frontline workers. We do have, of course, the other folks, the back office folks that are in a hybrid situation and really looking to inspire folks to come into the office to collaborate and spark that innovation. And we're in that model right now, that operating model where we're trying to move folks into like maybe 2 days a week and really trying to find anchor days, right? So that if you're coming in, you're not sitting there by yourself on your anchor day. Because that, what's the worst thing about commuting to work and then sitting in front of your computer on a WebEx by yourself? So we're really trying to balance that and trying to inspire like making moments matter, that coming together for a purpose.
Great. So we'll segue a little bit to DE&I. It's a newer acronym, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, for those that may not know. Is it here to stay? What do business leaders need to know about this in managing their teams and employee expectations?
Oh, it's here to stay. I would say that I think that the priority for me, and it's funny, I have a lot of friends ask me like where the extra initial came from because they may have grew up with D&I. And really are just trying to understand and what's the difference in the definition? And I simply describe it as, like, let's think about having a house party. And since we're talking about the Super Bowl, let's talk about having like a pre-Super Bowl house party. And so from a diversity standpoint, we are going to invite everyone in this room to the party, every single person. So we know we've got our Texan Cowboys fans are going to be at that party, our Eagles fans. I've got Minnesota fans. The Bills Mafia will be there. Everyone is invited to that party. That's what we're talking about in that diversity space. But when I think about all of you folks are invited to this great Super Bowl party I'm having, I want you to have a say in the playlist. So you're each going to participate in that playlist. Send me a playlist. So like, hey, you are all in it. You have a voice in this. And then we all together, like from an equity standpoint, we're just going to enjoy and experience the music together. We're going to have some fun. Are you a dancer? Go out there and dance like Elaine from Seinfeld. If not, that's okay. You can sit with me at the bar and just table dance, right? So that's how we have to really look at D&I for people to understand it. And how are you going to demonstrate that as a leader through the organization is really critical. And I just a shout out, Amy, because Rob, Amy, and Jackie, what they probably did just very intuitively, intrinsically, is follow that D&I model into this meeting. So when you've invited everyone, you invited everyone. You did vendors, friends that you just met or got introduced, you know, maybe experts in the industry. You had clients, maybe future clients here. You really, when you're throwing your party, you said everyone's invited. And then you went out to the team and said, hey, what's top of mind for you? And you're like, give us your opinion. What do you want to talk about? Boy, you couldn't hit I better than anything else right there, right? And then, of course, the experience of this. We're all experiencing this. Like, I'm not in the HVAC, but I'm going to go home, and I'm going to sound like an expert, by the way. My husband and I are renovating a house. He's going to be like, I don't know who you are and what you did in Vegas, but go renovate this house. Like, that's demonstrating DEI, right? Like, you demonstrate that in a very organic, intrinsic way. And if you can do that in everything that you do with the team, like, that's the leadership stuff that's here to stay.
You go.
So the Cosmopolitan is always voted as one of the most diverse workplace. And I think what we do well is we do it very organically. So we're not focused on, you know, hiring for the numbers. And I've worked with companies in the past where we say, you know, we're going to hire a certain minority group, but that has never been the focus. We don't even pull those. We didn't even generate the numbers until recently when we wanted to look at how diverse we were. And we realized we were a very diverse workforce. I think we do it, some examples on how we do it organically. It's Black History Month. So, you know, we invited a minority-owned vendor to kind of share their cuisine types with our coaster. We have our playlist going through back of house. We have been introduced through cuisines, musics. We do like spotlights. So we interview senior leaders who are from a certain ethnic background and, you know, kind of have them share their stories. We have a little different videos. So I think DEI definitely here to stay, but it's important that it's done organically because when we force it, it's very obvious and co-stars and, you know, people can tell. So to do it what feels natural to your DNA, I think that's what's key.
Yeah, and I'll just finish by saying there's a staggering statistic over the last year that 45% of people in the workplace were harassed. And if we think about diversity being an identity of socioeconomic status, race, ethnicity, gender, you name it, we all have different diverse identities in this room. And 45% of your employees being harassed is a horrible statistic, especially if you're thinking about all of the harassments that weren't even reported, right? If people didn't feel safe enough. So to me, it's about, is your workplace a safe place? Can you show up as your full self every single day, all of your identities being a parent, a mother, a friend, and are you able to perform your duties? So I think it is here to stay. And the other thing I will say is it is becoming regulated. It's you know, certainly something, especially in the EU and other parts of the world that are now that you have to report out on, whether it's diverse statistics or folks on your board. Even the gender pay gap is something that we're seeing a lot abroad, and it's coming here too, to the US. So I think if you're listed on NASDAQ, you now have to have a more diverse board than ever, and there are more statistics that are coming out, and I'd be happy to talk to you about that because there's a lot of climate stuff coming down too.
Can I piggyback on that? Because you went to psychologically safe, and I think that's just really meaningful for folks here to understand. Just, we can double click on that. Mace mentioned it yesterday, and Mace, because we're besties. well, in my mind. So I was just really thoughtful. Like she said, when I was in Japan, like I was not my best self. I didn't feel good. I was afraid to be anything less than perfect. I was afraid to ask for help, ask questions. And she wasn't in an environment that she didn't say psychologically safe, but she said I was not in a place I was comfortable to be my best self, to execute and effectively be part of this team to execute. And what really struck me, like after like an hour later, it hit me. She said that, oh, wait a minute, when I went to Texas, yeehaw, I was in a part of a team that provided that psychological safety. Not only did we talk about the mistakes, but then we brought together as a group because as a team, we wanted to be more successful and more effective. Because of that, she was able to lift her goals and capabilities, and she became the best version of herself. And it was really because, she said, because of the psychological safety. So when you think about D&I, like people have to bring, be able to be safe to say, I don't understand, I may disagree. And it's just like, as we're talking about return to work, just be able to give that to your teams. That's like a really simple action, is to have that safe place that they might not just agree with everything we say.
Eve, just to piggyback on that, so what we do at the Cosmopolitan is we have something called Hear More sessions. So those are meetings with our hourly employees and with a skip level. So it'll be like a vice president of people. So it's really to get feedback, and a diversity of thought is like a key part of the Cosmopolitan. So we ask them, you know, what's going on, what's working, what's not, and that psychological safety. So, you know, you're not with your direct managers. It's really you speaking with a people team. And then their feedback is gathered, but it's anonymous, and it's gathered and shared with the department head. And then department head now has to put a plan together to make sure that all the concerns are addressed in a timely manner.
Great. And I just realized I can't see any of the screens. Did my statistics pop up? No? Okay. Sorry, Eric. Christina sent over some great statistics that I segued with our questions, but technical difficulties, but that's okay. So we all hear younger generations are demanding certain requests from their employers before accepting a job. What are the trends here, and how much do you really think employers have to change or not to adjust?
So there's definitely a trend. So for anyone interested, I'm hiring 3 business partners. So if anyone knows anyone talented and who's willing to move to Las Vegas, and I have 3 positions that's open in my team. So I've been doing a lot of interviews for candidates, and 3 things I've identified is, one is the question for growth. So they're really interested in mentorship and growth and how much, you know, mentoring they can get throughout their journey. So that's something that's been relatively new. It was more focused on like pay and flexibility. So, you know, we offer a mentorship. So we pair as executive leader with our hourly co-star for a 10-week program throughout the year, so that they have the continuous growth. But we talk about those things, and it seems to really interest our candidates. Another thing is, you know, flexibility. We talk about remote working. Is that an option? You know, how are the hours? And that's another question we've been getting. And the third one is wellness. So, you know, the focus on wellness. So right now we're going through a transition. So we've been acquired by MGM Resorts International. So we were previously owned by a private equity firm. So now a lot of things are changing. We have changes in leadership, changes in programs, and we've been really making sure that co-stars feel safe and co-stars feel supported during this transition, because, you know, leadership's changing. So one of the things we offer is, you know, change management courses. We offer, we partner with behavioral health therapists to talk about, you know, how to, you know, feel comfortable and feel safe during the transition. And we have Wellness Wednesdays. So we talk about some, you know, wellness topics on Wednesdays. So I would say those are the 3 kind of key things that I've been noticing when we speak to candidates, at least recently.
One of the things I think about with DE&I, and where, you know, ideally you all are on your DE&I journey, and if you're not, I encourage you to start with your benefits. So if you're a company that, for example, changes your logo during Pride Month, are your benefits actually inclusive of those people that you say externally that you're supporting? Similar to with the recent overturning of Roe versus Wade, a lot of companies, and hopefully yours did, stand up for women or sent an email or really postured in that way. Are your benefits truly inclusive of women? So I think in the hiring process, it's certainly something that I ask about, like what your DE&I policies are, what you stand for as a company, and also just how you're showing up for the community in general. I think another thing that's super staggering is companies committed $200 billion in racial equity after George Floyd was murdered. So are companies actually walking the talk when they're talking about this? Do you really stand for folks in your community and also your employees, or are you just posturing? So I think it's super important to kind of look externally or internally before you talk externally as well.
I agree on all of that. I personally, my son was leaving a small shop. He's in insurance and a benefits expert. And like when he talks about it, I hear the Charlie Brown teacher voice. And I'm like, I don't understand anything about benefits. I'm in HR, but I don't know what you're talking about. And he was leaving the small shop and being recruited by a huge organization. 20 people in the shop that he had been in, grew up in, and then is going to a 70,000 FTE colleagues global organization. And he's sort of in this like mind blown opportunity right now. And I'm like, what's most important to you? Because I was super curious about the move, and he's in a comfortable spot. And he says, just like they align with my, like what's important to me. Like they're giving back to the communities, and they're not just selling benefits to people. They're helping people change lives. And I was just like, really? I thought it was just going to say the salary, like truly. Yeah. But he was really like focused on his holistic development. He was super focused on, listen, I have a lot of years to work, but I want to align it with a company that aligns with my own personal beliefs.
I'm so obsessed with that. One of my personal passions is Gen Z. I do not identify as a Gen Z person, but I'm obsessed with them as a generation. I think they fight for what they want, and they're so values driven. I think millennials are similar to that, but they're not necessarily as outward about it yet. And how incredible is that? Because when we're all at a bar or talking to your family and friends, someone asks you about your job, you're like, bah humbug sometimes. But you're like, I have a company that really stands for something, or that really supports me and my identities. Like, that is what really gets people out of bed in the morning and wants to make them stay. Like, if we're talking about employee turnover, you want to be a company that people want to stay to work at. So showing up and for the communities and for the people that you care about. And, you know, shout out to Nest, because I think you guys do that really well.
Thank you. Perfect segue into this next question around organizations and charities and employee support. A lot of times it comes from the top. And Gee, I think you alluded to this earlier about, you know, how can the average business leader in this room help engage their team members to want to be a part of it and not have it feel so forced?
So I think that's where the word voluntold was born, where, you know, you're voluntold to do something, be part of the charities. I think what we've done successfully in the past is we have a little form where our co-stars can submit charity or volunteer event that they can be part of. So, you know, let's say I have a team member who's passionate. She has a cat and she loves animals. So she brought this animal shelter to our forefront, and we looked at it and we felt like this is something that we could support. So whether it's an in-kind donation, whether it's, you know, a walk, whether it's, you know, a monetary donation. And once we select their charity, they are the biggest champion. We don't need to even do anything. Like, they bring their fellow team members to be part of it. And that's how we've been running our charities. We've really had the co-stars drive it. So ask them, you know, what kind of charities do you want to be part of? And they bring it to us. And then we just sponsor them. And that's how the partnership has been successful.
Do you get the support from the higher-ups?
We do.
Because you have a lot of employees, too.
We do. Absolutely.
You get that many suggestions. Are they supportive?
Absolutely. So we have almost like these five pillars. So there's some criteria. So it's not just any charity that I support. But if it fits in our five pillars, if it fits within, you know, our beliefs and values, then absolutely. And it could be as little as, you know, maybe a room night stay at the Cosmopolitan for their auction, or it could be a $2,000, $20,000 donation, or in-kind donation, or a walk, or the whole hotel ops teams go to volunteer at a certain charity. So it really depends, but we definitely do make sure that we support something that our co-stars feel passionate about.
Yeah, I agree. And I love your notes on how it has to kind of ladder up to your pillars. I just think it's really important for a company to have some kind of oversight. So you're really like, when you're out there in the community, you have some kind of, you know, you're really standing on your own purpose, even though your employees are speaking through you. And to the point about leadership, I think it's been most effective in my career when I've seen leaders talk about these programs, when they lead with it, maybe in your, you know, daily supply chain meeting, it's not necessarily top of mind, but at least mentioning it, or mentioning that it's Black History Month and these are the ways that I am out there in the community. I encourage you to do the same is what I think is most effective. So I would encourage you all to start bringing it up in a regular fashion.
Yeah, I think this entire team has a great opportunity here to sort of align all the great work you do and the volunteer work, and action it on your need, right? Your own need to look for talent and try to get that pipeline of skilled workers. And so one of the things like maybe that you can potentially do is like, hey, if you do have a partnership with Big Brothers Big Sisters or the police athletic league, like you can partner with them and have your technicians go out and help volunteer. Because what's more inspiring is like if you have a big brother or big sister that you're mentoring and you're like, hey, come along to Home Depot with me today, see what I do, do you want to help put in that electric box? So I thought Sarah's, you know, example of, hey, I want to learn that. A lot of you know, kids that are looking for mentors, and you have like a whole field of people with this skill set that can help volunteer. So that's one way to action it. At our organization at TD, we have these like very large opportunities to participate in the United Way and other things. But in the teams, we do very similar. G is like, we act local. What is our team's passion? Like, what is your passion that you want to get involved in? And the team's going to rally around that. And we were able to do that a few times. And in this remote hybrid ways, like you can get creative. Like, hey, like, do you spend like a few hours and everybody goes out into the community and does like a pickup garbage day? Whatever the passion is that you want to support on your team members, that helps create that collaboration and we're in it together feeling.
I'll also just quickly mention that there, you know, it's the right thing to do. I wholeheartedly believe that it should be, you know, just something that you're, the integrity of these kind of programs is something that your company should care about. But there's also an ROI and a strategic business imperative here. Companies that are purpose-driven are more likely to be bought by investors and things like that. But I would also say that customers are increasingly choosing companies that stand for something. And they will, I am a customer myself, and we all are here. And I'm sure we're making those decisions based on, you know, for example, like a Patagonia, I'm more likely to buy a sweater from there because I like what they stand for as a business. So it's also strategic.
Great. So all of us in this room are in the customer service industry in one way or another. I'll just read off a recent statistic. 4 in 10 respondents said their in-store shopping experiences were less enjoyable than prior to the pandemic. Almost 2/3 of these respondents cited poorly trained or prepared retail staff, and 60% blamed inadequate staffing levels. How can we get the service levels and expectations and work ethic back to where they used to be pre-pandemic?
I'll jump on this for a second. That statistic is pretty alarming, but if you think about what that translates into is like we've had a global turnover of attrition. And so if you think about all of the service stores, 40% of the folks in the stores are brand new and they're being trained. So we have probably unreasonable expectations walking in that someone on their second day is going to be able to fulfill that Starbucks order that's super complicated. It's really about, hey, if 40% of our workforce is new to the role, then do we have those expectations really managed? And so like, how are you going to develop and help those folks get into so that you're operating? It's going to take a lot of mentorship, a lot of developing. And where I think companies should be thinking about leaning in is around your people managers and really supporting them. They're being squeezed. They're being squeezed from the top of the house to produce. They're being squeezed by our friends in finance to cut expenses, hit the numbers, right? Production, whatever it is. But they're also being squeezed from their directs. And if you think about it, their operating model has changed dramatically. If someone was coming into late work, they would be walking by your desk, but now you're in this hybrid model. And now we're expecting them to be great people managers and coaches and mentors. And so if there's an investment here to help develop those folks, I would say invest into your team, help them be better coaches, performance managers, not be uncomfortable with what they perceive maybe as the uncomfortable conversation, right? And really lean into that performance. You probably have a lot to say on performance management, but that's where you can help on that statistic.
So when about a year ago, when we were returning from, you know, the pandemic, we had a tagline. I had a campaign for our managers called Return to Luxury, because it was survival mode in the past. And they were still stuck in that mentality of, you know, that survival mode. And we are a luxury industry. We wanted to make sure we provide the luxury experience to our guests. So it's really that shift of mindset. Like it was simple, but they just didn't realize we were back and we had to provide the best we could for our guests. So we had different, you know, training sessions, mentorship. We really focused on the leadership group to really inspire and motivate our team members in delivering the best for their co-star. So that was something that we really worked on returning from the pandemic.
Something I think about a lot is the materiality of business, probably because of my sustainability work. But I think everyone in this room can agree, and particularly in retail, that your employees are the most material part of your business, truly. And it costs money to, you know, always hire new people and figure out why people aren't happy. And, you know, there's a huge attrition rate. I would encourage you all to start with those front lines of people. If they're unhappy or if they're turning over a lot, you need to figure out why. And maybe you need to invest in them more. And programs like this are what folks really care about. And I think I would encourage you all to kind of start as well. But your employees will always be your most material part of your business. And they're the most expensive part of it sometimes too. So I think figuring that out is extremely important.
Any questions from the audience? Sorry, I can't see back there. Any parting words of wisdom for the leaders in the room?
I'd just like to say, every staff member that I've encountered for a few days have been.
Thank you very much. That's what we like to hear. Thank you.
How are we feeling in this room, y'all? A little tired.
Have the room jet lagged.
Yeah.
We're standing between helping children and cocktails.
I know. It's a horrible,
this
horrible
group,
place to be.
I'm just saying.
All right. Well, I do want to thank our panelists, our all-female panel, just reminding everybody. For your time today and for your travels, for those of you that traveled, G, thank you for popping down from your office and for hosting us here. And yes, we will segue into our Nest Nurtures component of our agenda. So segueing off of this topic, giving back is hugely important to Nest. And so give us like 5 minutes and we'll kick off the next part. And then we really will break for cocktails.